Preston Manning imitation, yes.
But Sue Lumsden, a former Ottawa broadcaster, has taken up a new hobby, birdwatching, and she's back from a birdwatching expedition on the Texas Gulf
Coast. At Haydenism, too. No,
no, that was Avery Haynes.
That was Avery Haynes.
But,
but she didn't want to make any friends.
Wrong bird.
No. And she went down to the Texas Gulf Coast and the Aransas National Wildlife Refuge. And,
the Rancid National...
Aransas.
Oh, Aransas.
Yes, you have to read your press kits first before you get on the air. the Aransas National Wildlife Refuge, and that's a great bird-watching place, Texas, and in for ecotourism. And,
well, you never know these days. You told me there was a monkey jungle one day, and there actually was.
There was. We said, well...
Until we went there.
We went there, and then, of course, the hurricane afterwards, the monkeys got thrown all over the place. Now, that was more butterfly world and orchid land and everything else that you come across in Florida, and be down in Florida in 2 weeks.
That was smooth, Steve. That was real smooth.
Oh, yes. I'm learning from the Segway Queen, Melanie Reffes.
She
will be in with us, I guess, in April is her next appearance. But I'll be down in West Palm Beach, Jupiter, Florida, in 2 weeks' time, and visiting as well. A chance to meet Denny Heron of the Palm Beach Airport Hilton and see what's new at his property. He'll be talking to us at the end of the month and recalling his career during his days with the Canadiens and the Pittsburgh Penguins and the inspiration for Willem wanting to be a goalie. So we have Denny Heron.
And we've got to get Norman's studio that day, because the great Norm is the guy who was my inspiration to hockey while I got interested in Denny Heron and hockey. So
everything comes around. 15 years ago, we first met Sue Lumsden when we went to Ottawa. So 15 years later, here she is showing up on Travel World. We can't escape from these people, can we?
No. We can run, but we can't hide.
They just seem to know where we are. And we were talking about Avery Haynes, and Avery Haynes had been down in Jamaica. And if you're planning ahead, there's the 3-day Jamaica Family Festival. Of course, Avery Haynes is our family travel specialist. And that's set for the 4th of July weekend. A number of activities for kids and parents alike. It's the Jamaica Family Festival, July 1st to 3rd, a unique opportunity for families to experience the island and around the Montego Bay area, which is a setting for the inaugural event.
The Langille Kennels of Montego Bay Sandals.
And you can visit, there'll be lively art and craft vendors, colorfully costumed dancers, live reggae music, host of activities such as professional hair
live
braiding.
Live reggae music for about 8 hours straight until you finally pick up the tempo, guys. I feel like a merengue coming on.
Face painting and more, capturing the imagination of this event. Family beach
That's
party
cool,
and
actually.
Sports day at Rose Hall Beach, where we were, and the country cookout, river rafting Jamaican style. Number of activities organized by the Jamaica Tourist Board at www.jamaicatravel.com. So if you're planning ahead, I think it's always a good idea to plan ahead, because too many people think at the last minute they're going to find space available or good fares, and they never do. So,
and you end up in a place where you'll hear this.
You ain't from around here, boy.
Yeah, you just have to pick whatever is left. Take it. There are some good deals out there, but if you live at the last minute, you get what nobody else wanted. You don't get your first choice. So always plan ahead.
Yeah, for sure.
Last year, it's almost a year and a half ago, we were in Waikiki, and you missed out on this, visiting the Hyatt Regency Waikiki. That was the day before you arrived there on the...
Yes, of course. But you also missed out on the tour of Sunset Beach when I went with Ray Baca, the radio engineer from Hawaii.
So we each had our own memories of Hawaii, but the Hyatt Regency Waikiki has upgraded itself to become the Hyatt Regency Waikiki Resort and Spa, just opened last month with a renovation.
I like that word, spa, huh?
Yes, I have to visit a spa.
It's a word
all
you're
the time.
Familiar with.
Yes, particularly the Philadelphia style. $42 million. Nahohala, the Waikiki's first world-class spa.
Say that again, Stephen.
Opens Nahohala?
Yes, Nahohala.
Yes. Will open its doors for business April 1st. 10,000 square foot spa on the 5th and 6th floors of the Hyatt Regency. Gives you a view of Waikiki Beach and the Kuala Mountains. And Kohala will be on two levels. 19 treatment rooms, exercise area, everything to put together a downtown resort spa experience. That's where we had dinner on the Saturday night when we arrived there with Cynthia Fodor, the combination Italian and Chinese cuisine that they merged into one fusion style at the Hyatt Regency. Italian and Chinese cuisine. All you can eat, and it's served as it's prepared.
Oh, is that chopped sweet parmesan?
The new variety. New variety. That
Yo, Guido, pass me another egg roll.
Fusion cuisine that is sweeping all across America. It hasn't hit some of the hinterland
you
yet.
You want fusion cuisine. You do that in Montreal. We put everything together.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I actually got some of the best food in all of Canada right here in Montreal.
Of course, Montreal getting the upgrades to the airport, the $1.3 billion upgrade over 20 years. Of course, Pittsburgh, they leveled it and did it for $800 million, but Montreal takes the $1.3 billion to only do a renovation, so we'll have to see how they stick to their budget. And
because who's going to get their $200,000 mansions? I wonder, in all of this, who is the local equivalent of Regis Trudeau?
Yes, and the...
Regis Trudeau, by the way, is the contractor who built the Olympic Stadium in Montreal, a project that the then-mayor of Montreal, Jean Drapeau, once said, for the Olympics can no more have a debt than I have a baby, and his child is doing well, thank you very much. We've been paying for this 20 years later, and we're still paying for that Olympic
Stadium. Where's he been hiding?
He's dead.
Well, there's a story behind that, but we won't get into it. But
yeah.
And this is what the reason why today there is so much opposition in many cities to getting the Olympic Games. It started in Montreal, the cost overruns, and cities
they
in
would
North
do,
America.
They would do things. Actually, the folks at Liberty Works would enjoy this. This is a story of another conspiracy and government
and government cover-up, and it is excesses taken to the max.
Join your local militia. No, but...
No, leave that for Capelli.
No, but seriously, though, this is a thing where when they were building the Olympic Stadium, and this was well-known by Regis Trudeau, the contractor overbilling. They would drive a truck in with supplies straight through one door, straight out the backside, would come back, and would get logged as being shipped five or six times before the stuff would actually be dropped off. This would be sent to billing. They would pay the bill, and of course, it goes by... There is an old joke, of course, in Canadian politics about who built the Trans-Canada Highway. And they talk about, well, the guy from Quebec can do it, the guy from Toronto, the guy from Vancouver, and you quote on it, and the guy from Toronto says, $3 million, how much for this? You know, profit overhead and materials. And the guy from Toronto, profit overhead and materials. And the guy from Quebec says, $9 million. He says, what do you figure? He says, well, $3 million for you, $3 million for me, $3 million to get the guy from Vancouver to do it. You're listening to Travel World on the Liberty Works Radio Network.
Across America via satellite.
Thundering the bouncer.
The hell is a banshee?
Seek help.
Travel World Radio Show.
If you sleep longer, you'll be more rested, right? 777-4515 for Vitamin Green.
My Bonnie lies over the ocean. My Bonnie lies over the sea. My Bonnie lies over the Liberty Works. Oh, bring back my body to me. Bring back, oh, bring back my body to me, bring back, oh, bring back my body to me. My body controls the Liberty Works switchboard. My body lies over the sea. My body controls the switchboard, and we'll keep on singing this song until she comes back on back on the air with Travel World. Bonnie, we want you back, and we'll keep on singing
I'm back. Stop.
This song.
Stop.
You
stop.
Do. Bring back. Bring back, oh, bring back my Bonnie to me, bring back, oh, bring back my Bonnie to me.
Yeehaw! Thank you very, very much.
She'll kill us. And that was Ode to Bonnie by the Travel World Singers. Bonnie was on the air with us when we were over at CIQC. Alex managed to get her to talk on the air. One of the things we enjoy doing here at Travel World is to involve everybody who participates in the show. Bonnie, of course, is a very important cog in the wheel here at Travel World. And so we do encourage you to participate, Bonnie.
And also
that was a hook.
That was a hook.
I guess we got to sing the song again, huh?
No, please don't.
We welcome Sue Lumsden from Ottawa on the air with us. Stephen, tell us about Sue. Yeah,
Sue Lumsden is a former Ottawa television news anchor who has taken up a hobby over the past few years of bird watching, which is sweeping across North America as well, increasing in interest. And she's back from a tour of the Texas Gulf Coast. Good morning.
Well, hello, hello. And by the way, those of us who follow this sport, if you wish to call it that, or recreational activity, don't call it bird watching, but birding.
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 Okay, it's birding.
How's everybody?
Doing good. Beautiful.
Were you singing live?
That was recorded yesterday. Everybody who was up altogether too late. But we thought it was so funny listening to it this morning that we just had to do it. We're trying to encourage Bonnie to participate. Bonnie, have you ever been birding? No,
she's
no, that's not. She won't.
She's out buying earplugs.
The cat got her tongue.
Cat got her tongue, that's
yes,
what it
the
is.
Yes, the cat and the bird. Now, how many years have you been involved in birding?
I just started birding about 2 years ago, although I got interested almost 5 years ago when I moved out to the country. And I live in a beautiful log home now near the village of Vars, which is southeast of Ottawa, about 35 minutes by car. And we are surrounded by forests. And all these beautiful birds started arriving, and I wanted to know what they were. So I started buying the bird books and then eventually started reading the columns in the newspaper and put out more feeders and started, you know, walking around identifying everything, and there we go. I'm a bird.
And you just got hooked. Now, you started in it quite slowly. They always tell you, see whether you're interested first, visit, you know, take part in some lectures.
I started taking
now
courses.
Now you're talking.
Who's that?
That was some other guest.
Oh.
It's okay. She enjoys the idea of taking courses on birding. Tell us a bit more about these courses.
I take courses from a very well-known birder in this area named Bruce DeLabio.
Burdan.
Pardon?
There's Bird Burdan from Plattsburgh.
Oh, I
He's
see.
A well-known, yes.
Anyway,
a well-known birder.
My leader is Bruce DeLabio. He's been on the World Series championship team representing COA, where they go to the World Series of Birding in Cape May, New Jersey. He's won that a number of times with his team. And I started taking courses from him, and he said, well, the binoculars you have are and he said, not a very nice word. And I said, well, I would like to wait a little bit of time before I buy new expensive ones. And he said, trust me, I've seen a lot of people take these courses. You're hooked. Get the binoculars. I did. Bought the Bausch & Lomb's and never looked back.
You went on this tour, how long, down to the Texas Gulf Coast? That was a one-week tour?
No, it was 9 days, although flat-out birding for about 8 of those days. We flew down to Houston, and immediately Bruce picked us up in a van. The company I went with is called Turaco Nature, Inc., and that's a fantastic company. Anyway, we flew into Houston, and then we drove down the coast, down to the Fulton-Rockport area, and used that as a base for about 3 days, and then went further south down to Harlingen and used that as a base for a couple of days. And then we left the Gulf Coast and went up the lower Rio Grande Valley to a place called Zapata and used that as a base just for one night, and then birded our way back and then back up to Houston again. It was fantastic.
So it was
8 days of flat-out birding.
8 days of actually doing it. These are full dates outside of your hotel. You don't go just to 1 hour, 2 hours.
Oh, it's not a birding walk. No. You're up around 5:30 probably at the latest. We had one gal on our tour who was doing her yoga meditation before birding every day, so she was up even earlier. But you're on the road 6:30 off to an early location. You start to, you know, you shop the night before and carry some food with you. Try to get a thermos of coffee from the last hotel that you stayed in, and you hit the road because you want to be at your first birding location for dawn. This is not a walk around in a relaxed way kind of holiday. You're quite active. It's good for the soul, and it is spiritual in its own way, but you're very, very active. There's no hanging around hoping the birds will come to you, except for one little portion of the tour, and I'll tell you about that if you like.
Sure, I'd like to learn about that.
Okay, there's a little town in Texas. It's on the way from Harlingen on up to Zapata, and the town is called Sal Niño. And in Sal Niño, there's a couple named the DeWins, and they've become quite famous in that area. In fact, if you look at birding groups and things on the internet, if someone's talking about a trip to Texas, they will talk about what birds they saw at the DeWitt feeders. And this is a couple from Minnesota that has been going down to a piece of property they bought in Saloniño, Texas about 16 years ago. They then donated it immediately to some conservancy group, which gave them in return a lifelong lease. Now they go down there with a trailer and their satellite dish and they hook up, etc. And they just set out feeders and they feed birds and welcome anybody who wants to come all summer long, or not summer, but I guess it seems like summer to them because they go down when it's winter in Minnesota, of course. So I think they're down there for about 6 months. They have a guest book. They've had people there from Japan, from Germany, from Iceland, and I know you guys are going to Iceland too.
Yes, anyway, next month.
Yeah, they're fantastic people, and they don't ask anything except that you don't bring any garbage and you don't leave any garbage. They will accept contributions to help feed the birds, and they've got all kinds of orioles and brown jays and specialties coming in, and people actually go and sit in the lawn chairs that these people put out and sit and wait for certain kinds of orioles to come to the feeders, and that is probably the most relaxing, sedentary part of the tour. If you're going to the lower Rio Grande, that's what you do, is you go to the DeWitt feeders and you sit, and they're happy to welcome you. One of them is there all the time. They come out and open up the gate at sunrise, and people can waltz in and sit and join them anytime during the day. They don't feed people. They could hardly afford to do that. They do pay to feed the birds, and as I said, they will accept donations. But they're just wonderful people.
This is the type of characters that you bump into, because on the trips themselves, there are characters that are involved in birding.
Oh, there's a lot of characters. In fact, I've kind of turned into one of them. When I was news anchoring, I guess I used to wear pretty upscale clothes and the high heels and the full makeup, et cetera, et cetera. Well, none of that anymore. It's tilly hats and the vests and the pants with the big pockets, and you want to have them gathered around your ankles, which is not necessarily the most attractive look, but you don't want bugs and things to crawl up your legs. So I've turned into one of those geeky people that sometimes watch birds, which is not to say other people are geeky. I'm only saying that about myself. But talking about the characters you run into, one of them in Rockport, Texas, which is close to the Aransas National Wildlife Reserve, there's a character named Captain Ted who runs Captain Ted's Whooping Crane Tours. And his wife's involved. She drives the boat, and his daughter books the people on it. Captain Ted is very proprietary about all of these whooping cranes. Apparently, there's only about 180-odd left in the wild, in the world, and most of them winter on this refuge. And so Captain Ted takes boat tours in through this refuge so that you can get a much closer look than if you were on land. And it's a fantastic tour and lots of fun, and he's a real character with his captain's hat and all the way on out when he's driving the boat. Now, he smokes, so he goes up on deck to have a cigarette now and then while his wife drives the boat. But he's on a loudspeaker, and some people are inside the boat, you know, and there's lots of windows and seats, and they give you coffee and juice and everything else. But you can also go up on deck, which is what I did for most of the tour. But Captain Ted's there, say, oh, snowy egret at 10 o'clock. If you look left at 9 o'clock, there's some other kind of bird out there. He knows all of them. And then when you get to the whooping cranes, finally, he knows all of the family groups. And he will tell you, you know, when they came back and how many chicks they had and what happened and when they flew off, etc. And he also will tell you about the lore and the way that these whooping cranes live. And they do mate for life. And he told us a very sad story about one whooping crane male who lost his mate, and he talked about her last days and how sad it was that you could tell she was weak and she was dying. And he told us about this incredible mourning period that this whooping crane took. He said it lasted all of about 1 hour before he enticed another female from another group over.
We have to kind of take a break here for news with Mark Allen on the Liberty Works Radio Network. We're talking with Sue Lumsden about birding. Stay listening to Travel World. Right now.
You're listening to Travel World with Willem and Steve.
Stay listening. Liberty Works Radio Network. Travel World Radio Show. Live satellite.
This is Liberty Works Network.
I want to get away. I
Welcome back to Travel World, segment number 3. Willem back is Stephen Pickford and Bonnie behind the console. We got Art in studio. Natalie from Air France. We got Sue Lumsden. Good grief, we're trying
everyone
to beat a record this week, aren't we?
Just trying to see how many people will appear or have their voices on the air. Sue Lumsden is at home outside of Ottawa, back from birding along the Texas Gulf Coast. And one of the areas along the Gulf Coast, more known for its spring break infestation, is at this time of year, South Padre Island is also known for birding.
Oh, South Padre is beautiful. It was just amazing. I'd love to go back. I understand it's quite wild.
Hint, Stephen.
Got some lovely pigeons down here in Montreal.
Yeah. I was just wondering. Hi, Sue.
Hello.
Sue. Hi, this is Natalie. Sue, go ahead.
So I was just wondering, as a traveler, if you were not sure that you were very interested in birding, but you wanted to see, try it out for a while, would there be any tours that you know of that you could take birding as a very small part of the tour? For example, doing it on the 1 week stay, maybe one full day or maybe a couple of hours a day, as opposed to getting up very early in the morning and hiking out to see the birds?
Not that I know of, but there are other things that you could do. For example, if you checked into the internet, you would find out that there are lots and lots of people on birding groups who can give you particular locations and particular local guides that you can hire in these areas. So if you wanted to go to South Padre Island, there is a way that you could go there and stay in a hotel and get in touch probably ahead of time to find somebody to take you birding. Or if you just had binoculars and a bird book, you could go to the convention center on South Padre, and they have a wonderful boardwalk, and they have good viewing spots and blinds where you can look at some of the shore birds and the wading birds, and then there's lots of knowledgeable people. You look around for somebody in a Tilly hat and ask them a question, and they will probably tell you all about the birds that are there. Birders are wonderful, and they love to network, so they will help less experienced people as well. I don't know of a tour company offhand that would specialize in birds and then not get you going most of the day looking for them, because the people who take these tours, that's generally what they want to do. But if you don't want that active a vacation, there are ways. And in fact, with this company that I went with, Turaco, they've got a website, and they even have a little section that says if you want to go on individual birding, and they give some tips about how to accomplish that. Let's see, their website is www.turaco.com, and they also have a 800 toll-free number if you want me to give that to you.
Yes, I give it out.
Okay, it's 1-877-279-6589, and I can repeat that if you like. 1-877-279-6589. And many of these places in Texas, it's a great website. I just started doing some research before I went to Texas called Where Do You Want to Go Birding in Texas Today? And they give you contact with the local chambers of commerce. So there's all kinds of ways to hook up and do some individual lower key, less time birding segments if that's what you want to do on a holiday.
But Sue, when you're going birding, you would probably have to hire a local guide, because there must be some sort of technique, because I can't imagine that you could just walk into a field and that the bird will just stay there and be looked at. I mean, there has to be
some... It depends on what kind of bird you're talking about. If you're looking at shore birds and waders, particularly these big, huge egrets and things, you can walk to a location such as Rockport Beach and just set yourself up, and you will see black skimmers, you'll see a great egret, you'll see a snowy egret, you'll see great blue herons, you'll see white pelicans, American brown pelicans. You will see all kinds of different birds that are fairly still as they're feeding. You'll see tricolored herons and a little blue heron. And if you have a book, you can identify all of these things individually if that's what you want to do. And even if you don't care what they are, they're just beautiful to look at. Now, if you're looking
But would you
at
say that the birds in the sanctuaries, sorry Sue, that the birds in the sanctuaries are more people-friendly, or they're more used to having people around them, and they stay longer than birds say in the wild?
Not necessarily. The sanctuaries, for example, Rockport Beach is not a sanctuary. It's just a great place for birds to feed, and they're more interested in feeding. Now, if you go running at them, of course, they'll fly away. But if you stay at a respectful distance, you can watch them. And when you're at some sanctuaries, yes, like the green jays in a sanctuary such as Santa Ana, they are very tame. tame in a way. They don't come and eat from your hands or anything, but you see them in the trees. Now, the further you get into a forest sort of environment, the harder it is to see a bird unless you are with a guide. And the guide at that point needs to have very good ears. They need to be able to pick out bird calls and then isolate which bird is in what area through the call.
You have to know in advance as well what the tour guide ratio is going to be, because the fewer people to the guide, you're going to get a better experience.
Oh, absolutely. We were 5-1, which was just fantastic. And the very most that this company would take on a ratio would be something like 7 or at the most 8-1. And any more than that, they then put on 2 guides. Now, some tour companies take, more people than that with one guide. We ran into some people who were on a tour, and they had more people than that. And they had to go with that situation with a higher ratio. They had to go high-tech. They had walkie-talkies and that sort of thing. We were able to keep it a little more informal and not so high-tech, which was more in keeping with the kind of holiday I would like to have.
And this also meant that you ended up seeing around 188 different birds, including a roadrunner.
That was in Falcon State Park up in the Zapata area. And the funniest thing about that, of course, was we drove into the state park in this van, and one of the first things we saw was not a roadrunner, but, of course, a coyote. And immediately someone said, well, if we see a one-ton weight from Acme, we'll know the roadrunner's nearby. And it wasn't too much longer before we saw the roadrunner. And, of course, our guide picked it out, and everybody got a good look at it. And then it scooted off into the bush. But yes, we saw a roadrunner. Everybody wanted to. It was fantastic.
Hey, Sue, what's your favorite destination for birds?
Well, I would have to say so far, Texas. But you know what runs a close second up here in Canada? Algonquin Park.
Algonquin, now you're talking.
Oh, you bet. And Turco, as a matter of fact, is going to be running some Algonquin weekends for anybody from the States who wants to perhaps come up to this area. But there's a wonderful set of warblers and things that breed up in Algonquin Park. I was up there last spring. And it was just wonderful. We saw oven birds and prairie warblers, Canada warblers, American red starks, every kind of beautiful warbler that you'd want to see up in Algonquin Park. Another wonderful place in this area is Presque Isle. And, of course, a lot of people like to go to Point Pelee. I've not been to Point Pelee. I have a client that I always have to do some work for in May at that peak weekend for migration in Point Pelee. Also, Cape May, New Jersey is supposed to be wonderful. As I say, I've only started birding in the past couple of years, and this trip to Texas was my first international birding trip. Of course, I want to go to Costa Rica, and I want to go to Cuba.
Speaking of the more tropical destinations, the birds are probably more colorful, just like, you know, saltwater fish are more tropical than, or more colorful than freshwater fish. But would you say that, for example, French Polynesia, which is one of our friends' destinations, would be somewhere to go to as a bird watcher?
I have no idea. To tell you the truth, I've not done any research, so I don't know what kinds of birds they have there. Some islands don't have very many birds at all because there's not much of a food supply for them. I don't know anything really about French Polynesia, so I can't answer that question, but I'd be happy to look into it if you like.
And this also brings up the final point we'll make before going to the break at 11:45, is that do research beforehand. You'll get a lot more out of your trip by looking into the different species, the ecological habitats, even the history of the region. Do your research before you go, and you'll get a lot more out of your guide.
Oh, I think it's a good idea. We were sent by this company a field checklist of all the different birds which we could see. Now, it had, let's see, over 30 per page and more than 18 pages. Now, we did not see all of them, of course, because of the time of year, that sort of thing. What they gave you was a list of all the birds that have ever been seen in that area. But as you mentioned, we saw, well, you said 188. We saw 183 and heard another 5 that we never did actually see, but that our leader was able to identify by sound. And I trusted him enough to say, yes, he wasn't, shining us on about that. But I think research is always a good idea whenever you're traveling and for any purpose. I always think it helps a little to know something about the history. That helps you, when you're in your dealings with people and speaking with people, and they feel you've made a bit of an effort, and they're just as likely to make an effort back to you.
And that's all part of the whole experience. You get what you out of a trip, what you put in advance, and also your whole attitude, getting along with people. And you mentioned about the characters, but you have to be.
Sometimes you get a bonus. Have you got just 30 seconds for another story?
Yeah, 30 seconds we do.
Okay,
just about, exactly.
back to Sal and Nina, we met some people who were from Mississippi. They were just sitting with their feet in the Rio Grande, and I said, you know, I've only ever met one person from Mississippi, and it was 20 years ago, and I said his name and his town. I met him in the Bahamas, and they said, we know him. Give us your email address, and we'll give it to him when we get back. Now, of course, if he doesn't remember me, and I remembered him so clearly, including his town and his name, then that'll be embarrassing for me. But I thought that was kind of a good story, the old 6 degrees of separation.
Good birding story. Well, thanks for joining us this morning, Sue.
Well, thank you for having me on. I appreciate
it. Talking about birding. Stay listening to Travel World Across America on the Voice of Truth and Broadcasting. This is the Liberty Works Radio Network.
Across America via satellite.
You guys are insane.
Travel World Radio Show.
If you gave away 80 cents today, would it make a difference?
Machines in one DR trimmer mower.
Stage door, like a trip through the past.
Nothing like a little bit of Foreigner on Travel World. Yeah, speaking of which.
In which we are.
Yes. Yeah, we're foreigners to the States. Foreign country. This guy on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was asked a question, what country celebrates its confederation on the 1st of July? Now, first of all, the fact that we are confederate up here, okay, we were on the southern side of the war. That's why we confederated in 1860. You didn't know that, Natalie?
Didn't know that.
Well, that's why the war ended in the States in 1865. We confederated in 1867. That was the fastest country formation in history because we were scared because they'd come north and come and get us. And
so they just
scared.
Need a lot of land to keep everybody.
Something like that. But anyway, so this guy, and he has choices, you know, France, Ireland, both of which are republics.
That's right.
And he had to use a lifeline, and his lifeline didn't know. And I'm thinking, oh, man.
He had to call a friend?
He had to call a friend. He phoned a friend, and the friend didn't know.
And the friend...
the friend didn't know. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, you know, just on the fact of stupidity, this guy should not go on. And he did win $32,000, but gee, oh, yeah. They had some people on that show who couldn't answer what planet does the moon revolve around. And then they start, and then the British insurance company
says, they say, no,
the questions are too easy.
They're too easy, but you'd never underestimate the lack of intelligence on the part of many members of the population.
So now the new question has to be birding.
You are under a lot of stress, too, though.
Us? Oh, there?
No, there.
Like, it's not set up to put you on the stress. You know, like you get on the hot seat and all that.
No, they're not giving away their money.
We welcome in studio Natalie from Air France, and she was talking about French Polynesia, one of the great places to go birding. Actually, she was trying to get a word in edgewise and couldn't do it. but it was a valiant attempt. Anyway, what was I... Anyway, be that as it may, French Polynesia, of course, Tahiti.
Yes.
Papeete is the capital city in Tahiti, but it's all called the French Polynesian Islands, the whole area. One of the dream destinations for many, many people... And that's a hint, by the way.
It's a hint.
We have to cover it for Travel World. We can actually broadcast live from
there.
We
can broadcast live.
We were thinking of taking our mics to Hito, too, in Jamaica, but we haven't quite done that yet.
Along with some equipment from ConcealedPanels.com.
That's another kind of bird watching.
But another kind of bird watch.
Broadcast on the beach.
Yes. Actually, we could probably send some up there.
Yeah, she has experience, according to Vic Phillips.
Yes. Oh, we won't go there.
Hey, Shu, look at them gulls.
Yeah. I've never seen moths so big. Okay. Be that as it may, tell us about Air France and the service and all that other stuff.
Well, Air France is the airline which I believe now covers the most destinations worldwide, mostly via Paris. And out of the U.S., we have several gateway cities, New York being the biggest one. We have a daily flight out of Montreal and Toronto as well. So the flights are very accessible with Air France. The service is incomparable. We have our new business class services, which have this... a reclination of seats of 127 degrees, and first class service, which offers 180 degrees seating.
Reclination.
The seats recline.
Recline. I see.
It is an absolute word, I promise.
Hold on. I saw this on a commercial a few days ago.
Is that your final answer?
Every second row of the seats.
Yeah, that's right.
They removed every second row so that coach is now first class.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Well, I wouldn't call coach first class.
Well, a Canada 3000 would.
Canada 3000 would add another two rows of seats.
That's where all the seats went. That's why they took them out of the plane.
Right.
They sold them all the Canada 3000.
Yeah, because there's red, white, and blue seats.
Like the cheap old jetliner. You know, they took out the safety equipment to make room for more passengers.
Yeah, for example, the 757 that we're flying in Iceland Air only has 189 seats, but the same model of equipment at Canada 3000 is like 249, so you can imagine the seat pitch, 19 inches, You need a
Canada 3000, do they fly domestically between Canadian cities?
Oh, yeah, they fly domestically, and they also fly transborder. And
that's why they keep mentioning that as a punishment. If you win a trip to Toronto, it's flying Canada 3000. Actually, going to Toronto in the first place is a punishment in and of itself. There's something about that Toronto airport which just doesn't sit
Pearson?
Well with me. Pearson. It's funny. Montreal has three alternate airports. You know, we've got Mirabel, we've got Bromont, and we've got St. Hubert as viable alternatives to Dorval,
right,
should anything go wrong. And Dorval itself has three radar systems. Pearson, okay, the biggest, busiest airport in Canada, has one. That radar system breaks down, you're not going anywhere, Charlie Brown.
And you're lucky if you get diverted. They have to land at Hamilton. Hamilton can now take the biggest jetliners. However, there's absolutely no services at Hamilton once you land, so there's no public transportation,
there's
no restaurant.
By car either in Hamilton.
there's nothing. So
sorry, Mom.
You get to Hamilton, you are stranded.
Well, you can always bird watch.
Oh, well, actually, funny you should mention.
What,
here the segue.
The steel mills in Hamilton?
Sulumsden is from Burlington.
Bye-bye Blackbird. Yeah, Sulumsden's from Burlington.
Yes.
Like the other Lumsdens who were friends with my parents.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that story?
I remember that story as we as two out of three sipped their champagne and orange juice.
Tell us about the airphones on Air France.
You want to hear about the airphones?
Well, you see, we're talking about old times. Old time conjures up memories. Memories conjures up Norm. Norm is the guy we used to phone every time we would fly someplace. He was my neighbor here. The great Norm, he will soon be on the air with us. So that brings us to air phones, and that brings us to airplanes, and you're the airplane person. Talk about the phones on Air France.
Okay, the phones on Air France are, well, you validate it with your credit card, or actually you can buy a card in France that works on all Air France airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got about 1 minute for the absolute entire credit of your gold card.
Okay.
That's
selling the service?
Yes, especially when you're old.
I'm just saying you should probably make your call before you get off the ground.
It's not that
bad.
And
I'll have a double JD on the rocks, please.
Holy
It costs like $12 for 1 minute when you use these satellite phones when you're over the ocean.
It is.
Oh, really?
Same on cruise ships, isn't it?
So cruise ships are getting a little better. I think they're only like $9 U.S. now, but they're
trying to... We should air that segment about the smoker's cruise.
What is so important that you have to make a phone call from 35,000 feet?
Because we have to call Norm. That's what's so important.
Or somebody is phoning.
It's Norm. You have to call Norm.
Or you're not enjoying your flight and you're calling the customer relations department in advance.
Yes, hello, this call's cost me too much. Click.
We have this whole segment of, there's the whole French-English thing going on here in Montreal, so the fun joke is, welcome to Hydro-Quebec. For service in English, press 2, and you get a dial tone if you do that.
Well, it was like I was talking about Montreal, the days when Louise Roy was the vice president of North America for Air France. We figured she couldn't run the transit system here in Montreal, so she'd run an airline.
Yes, instead of one airplane every day, there'd be two every 2 days,
back-to-back. First one full with 300 people, the next one with two, and she'd say, our average load factor is 150 people. She learned well from the Transit Commission.
Yes, and the airplane would stop off at some place. The pilot would just walk out, stroll out, get himself a little a la police, and
read his tabloid in the cockpit. Of course, he'd stop for a snack, and I guess all those pilots went over to Northwest.
He'd take the aircraft out, and he'd run it on the highway like 2 inches behind a little Geo Metro.
Exact fare required. $4,000 for business class, okay.
That's why Airbus from France makes what they call Airbus.
Yeah.
you know, sir, they'd have that little wire there, you know, signal driver next stop.
And, so, and they sell advertising inside.
You see your transfer, yes.
There's a little sideways seat right behind, inside the cockpit, so his friend can sit there and talk to him in the hockey, game.
They have this little sign that says,
European carriers, the soccer game.
Well, you know, I actually flew between Rome and Paris in the cockpit. I flew on a jump seat.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And let me tell you, the only interesting part to that is the takeoff and the landing. The rest of the time, you're sitting next to a pilot, little arrogance. And the add to that he's French. And
that's worse.
So, you know, you had a lot of arrogance, and so they didn't pay much attention to you. And then you can't really fall asleep because you're strapped in by five seat belts. No kidding. You're sitting in
Right shoulder, left shoulder.
That's right,
waist,
around the waist, through the legs.
Harness
yeah.
through the legs over here, yeah.
You're just totally distracted.
That's a different kind of harness that you use, Art.
Oh, sorry.
That's for the movies
I'm
you make.
I'm thinking of Shayna Steele's Bungee.
Shayna Steele's Bungee, yes.
Yeah, it's coming to a movie theater not near you.
Coming to a VCR near you. So tell us a bit more. What kind of equipment serves Papeete? How would we get there from here?
You'd have to go via L.A., so we don't do the domestic flights. You'd have to get to L.A. We have a direct flight between Los Angeles and Papeete. I think it's a four-day-a-week service.
All right.
So you fly any domestic carrier.
And then it takes you about a minute by pierogies or whatever. Pierogies to go to.
Pierogies?
Pierogies.
That's the Hudson's Golden Trip.
He's a caterer for the flight, but with Air France's domestic alliance with Delta Airlines, they would fly you in there, now part of Alliance Carrier System.
Whole hour's gone by again, Steve, real fast.
Yeah, always goes by when you're talking to interesting guests. And next week we'll be talking to Sharon Delaney. She's off this weekend to a resort in Virginia where she's combining golf and skiing in the same weekend. So.
Just like we can do in Iceland.
Yes, we can do that.
Although she's smarter than us.
I'll be thinking of you two.
Now, wait a minute. Iceland's not such a bad place. We saw that video.
Yes, it is very interesting.
45 golf courses.
Lovely. It's looking very nice. The geothermal baths and the 100-degree water. And
we got 10 seconds to leave the air, guys.
I'm Stephen Pickford.
I'm Willem Backus.
I'm Art Moskovic.
Natalie Fawaz.
Welcome back to Travel World. Travel World is done in Montreal by the NASCAR Marketing Company. Join us next week.